So, Jose, I want to ask you your backgrounds.
Okay.
Like, when did you start getting into music and how did that happen?
It happened, well, the first time I was like 15 years old. One of my friends had a studio at his house. I thought it was pretty cool how they recorded and did the mixing there and everything. And he let me use it. So after that, I bought like a... Well, at first I was using Audacity, a free app to record.
So one question. Did you study or play an instrument before that? Did you play guitar or piano?
No, not
before at all. You were 15, you didn't do any music?
Anything, no.
Okay, so you just got right into the recording side of things.
Yeah.
So you had a friend in high school. You were in high school then.
Yeah.
What high school did you go to? Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Oakland.
Okay.
I went to Fremont High School and then to Life Academy High School.
Okay, okay. Oakland area. I notice your cell phone is in the 510 area code.
Yes.
What city do you live in now?
I still live in Oakland.
Oh, you commuted down. Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so you got to commute all the way from Oakland to Foothill College, huh?
Yeah.
That's when you come down to the sessions. It's quite a drive for you. That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Especially, I think your last session started at like 4 p.m., right?
Yes.
That's like total traffic. Okay. So you're in high school and your friend has a studio at his house.
Yes.
What software, what kind of equipment were they using back then?
He had a mixer. I forget which one it was. He was using Pro Tools and he had like the booth set up in pretty much in his closet.
And what kind of music were you doing?
It was hip hop.
And then at that point, were you interested more in the technical side of stuff or do you also rap? Are you a rapper?
I have.
Back in those days when you were 15, when you were first getting into it, were you like rapping sometimes too?
Yeah,
I was. Okay.
I mean, I still do sometimes.
You still do? Okay, cool. Then how did that evolve?
Yeah, and then after that, I was doing it at home, recording some of my friends. I bought a mic. At first, I was using it was an AKG 214, I believe, I bought. So I was just using that for a while. And then the same friend that had the studio, he opened a studio in West Oakland. And then I was doing like passing out flyers, helping them out to get more people to record at a studio.
I think you told me that you're also a graphic designer.
And
you
yeah, do, that's where I learned all
you
that.
You do Photoshop. How did you learn Photoshop? How did you learn graphic design stuff?
Just pretty much helping him out. I just, you know, he told me, he gave me the laptop and be like, hey, try this out. Try to make me a flyer.
Oh.
And then I've been doing it ever since back in the day.
So you're self-taught with Photoshop?
Yes.
Isn't it kind of interesting that Pro Tools is kind of like Photoshop?
Yeah.
Right? There's the tools. It's almost like Photoshop for sound, in a sense.
Pretty much,
right?
Yeah.
Also, they're both very deep applications where you can just kind of figure out how to do it, but also if you want to go deep. That's how it is with me with Photoshop.
It takes a lot of hours doing it.
This guy who opened up the recording studio in Oakland, he was a little older than you, right?
Yeah, he was older. He was older than all of us, everybody.
And then you continued doing stuff at your home studio, right?
Yes.
And then tell me some of the stuff that you did at home. You know, what did you focus on project-wise and time-wise?
I used to record all my friends around my neighborhood. I didn't charge them. I just, you know, just record them.
By that time, were you using Pro Tools?
Yeah, I was using Pro Tools.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't really know how to use it like very, very, very good. Just record and set up the mic and just record.
It's kind of like Photoshop, right?
Yeah.
You do the first thing in Photoshop, you can do a couple layers or something like that. Yeah. And in Pro Tools, you can create a track and record. But then, you know, you can go really deep.
Yeah.
And then what was the result of those recordings? Did they turn into like some mixtapes? Did people put some stuff up on SoundCloud or did they run with it in any way?
Yeah, I mean, some they did videos too, and others we sold like mixtapes.
So you're in your home studio. What's part of the story of how you progressed to the point of taking classes at Foothill College?
I wanted to get better quality sounding music for the people that I record. So that's pretty much why I want to learn everything about the whole process, mixing, recording, so I could, you know, when I record somebody, I could give them a better sounding song.
So when did you first start taking classes at Foothill?
It was in 2016 2016.
How did you discover the Foothill College Music Technology Program?
I was looking online. I Googled music schools or around the area.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. I found Foothill.
Have you been doing the classes pretty much 100% online?
Yeah, just online.
What have you appreciated? What are some of the strong points about the Foothill College Music Tech Program?
I would say everything. I mean, the opportunity to be able to book studio session and practice. So I think that's one of the best things. You know, I've never really recorded drums, and that's something that I would want to do. And, you know, the perfect opportunity, yeah, for you.
So having access to the facility.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you know how much studio time costs.
Yes.
You're up in the East Bay where they have some great studios like Fantasy Studios or 25th Street.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't
been.
Do
you know
there.
About it?
Yeah, I know about it.
So 25th Street is one of the best studios in the world. It's in Oakland. It's on 25th Street. Boom, boom. That place is amazing.
Yeah.
But heck, man, I mean, 1 hour of studio time in any of those studios is the same price as your whole tuition for, you know, at Foothill College for for a quarter. And really, our studio is giving those studios a run for their money. We're kind of at the same quality, quality-wise. Okay, so that's cool. Okay, I want to ask you about your experience at Mixed with the Masters.
Okay.
All right. You're the only person I've ever met face-to-face that actually went there.
Yeah.
Do you know the podcast Working Class Audio with Matt Boudreau?
Not
dude,
sure.
he's in Oakland.
Oh,
so
yeah?
This guy's name is Matt Boudreau, and I should make it required listening to all of our Music Tech students because every Monday there's a new podcast, and I swear to God, this podcast just gets better and better and better.
Oh man, I listen to it.
And actually, Matt Boudreau, he did go to Mix with the Masters. He went to the one with Chad Blake, actually.
Chad Blake.
Yeah. Matt Boudreau lives in Oakland.
Okay.
He's a professional audio engineer. He's been in the area for a while. He has interviewed guests who are Mixed with the Master people and also people that went there. Well, how long ago did you decide, at some point you decided you're going to go, right?
Yes.
Because it ain't cheap, right? And
no.
So you had to, like, a lot of things had to come into alignment for you to pull it off. Take the time off, and you had to travel, it costs a lot of money. How much planning did you do?
I've been wanting to go since last year.
Okay.
Since last year. It was, you know, I have to save up money and all that. So I decided to go this year.
And then how did you choose the event with CLA?
I chose him because, I mean, I have used some of his plugins and I watch his videos and kind of like his style, the way he does it.
So we're talking about Chris Lord-Alge.
Yes.
Also known as Lord of the Mix, also known as CLA. Now, when you were there, did you call him Chris?
Yeah, Chris.
You call him Chris, yeah? So people refer to him as Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
It's funny because he refers to himself as CLA a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
Coincidentally, I called you on the phone.
I think
either you were going to go the next day. I think you were either leaving that night, maybe. Like, I just got lucky.
Yeah.
And I was like so blown away. I had to ask you a few times, really? Wait, you're going? So that was so exciting for me, and I was so happy that I actually was able to call you. You left from San Francisco, and then where was your first layover?
It was...
The first flight was pretty long, right?
No, actually, it went straight to Paris.
Straight to Paris?
Straight to Paris, yeah.
How long was that flight?
It was 11 hours.
Piece of cake, especially for a kid like you. So you landed in Paris, right? And I'm going to guess it was the first time you've ever been to Paris.
First time,
right?
Yeah.
I've never been to Paris yet. It's definitely on my list. So then, what did you do when you got to Paris?
I stayed in Paris for 2 days. And then, of course, I walked down around the Eiffel Tower. I did some shopping, some stores.
Were you traveling alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tried some restaurants.
Uh-huh.
The food.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
So what was it like in Paris? What was the vibe like?
To me, it seemed a lot like San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed a lot like San Francisco.
Right.
It was pretty cool. A lot of people speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to worry, you know.
Cool. And then how did you get to Studio Fabrique?
Okay, so after Paris, I actually also went to Spain.
Wow.
For 2 days.
How did you get to Spain?
On a plane.
All right.
Plane from Paris.
Hopped on a plane.
It was 2 hours away.
You had that planned?
Yeah.
Did you have the plane ticket already booked?
Yeah, I had everything, pretty much everything booked.
How did you arrange your tickets? Did you do it yourself online or did you work
with
a tablet?
Yeah, online.
Okay, you figured it all out. You figured out your itinerary.
The whole schedule, online.
Now, did you do all this research by yourself or did you have any family that give you some advice on traveling to Europe?
I mean, pretty much like my family did give me advice, but I did all the booking by myself.
Did somebody say, dude, since you're in the neighborhood, you got to hop over to Spain?
Yeah.
Somebody told you that?
Pretty
that's pretty good advice, right?
I went to, there's a place, it's called Granada in Spain, where they have like old temples where the Muslims built.
Yeah.
So I visited that.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, I took a tour to Morocco also. A one-day tour.
Took a tour to Morocco, man. So it was a total once-in-a-lifetime experience.
I might as well do all
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Please go on. Then what happened?
After that, I went back to Paris, and then from Paris, I took a train down to, it's called Avignon. That's like 15, 20 miles away from La Fabrique. So on the train, they picked us up, a shuttle picked us up.
Studio La Fabrique actually has their own little kind of shuttle bus thing. They're ready to pick you up.
They pick you up,
at
yeah.
the train station, right? Because yeah. that's kind of how you get to that part of the country. You take a
By
you
got, train,
you
yeah.
You got to take a train,
You have
right?
to take yeah, a train, yeah.
They're not going to come in a helicopter.
It's a 3-hour train from Paris.
You sent me a couple photos of the grounds. The place looks beautiful. It's kind of like a chateau out in the country, right?
Yes, he's huge.
What do you know about the actual, like the owners and the management?
The owners were there. They told us that the guy that owned it before them, he was into records. He collected records, old records. And so he stacked them up all over the wall. And he just used to listen to him, when, you know, when on his free time. And I guess he passed away, and then they purchased the property from them.
Okay.
And they made it into a studio.
They turned it into a studio.
Studio.
And that's one of the things about the studio that I've noticed, is they kind of kept the residential vibe, right?
Yeah.
Like there's bookshelves with books, and
yeah.
there's just like couches, and it looks very comfortable. But also a lot of those things that are on the walls just happen to also be good for acoustical treatment, right?
Yeah.
Kind of lucked
yeah.
out. They're like bass traps, like a bookshelf is the, is
yeah,
not the
like,
poor, I'm going to say not the poor man's bookshelf, because we can't say that place is for a poor person, right? I mean, it looked like just incredible.
Yeah,
wealth,
man, it is.
Right?
Man,
I mean, somebody had to have some serious money to put together a studio like that.
Yeah.
Did they talk anything about the history of how the studio was built and designed, and how they chose the equipment? Was there any talk about that?
No, they didn't.
Because they got an SSL console, right?
Yeah.
Do they have like barefoot monitors?
They brought them in. I guess Chris was going to do a photo shoot with the monitor, with speakers.
Oh, okay. He has his fingers in everything. What day of the week did you arrive?
It was a Monday. Monday the 21st.
You arrived on the train on Monday.
Monday the 21st.
Okay. At what yeah. time?
Early morning.
The shuttle picked you up early in the morning,
yeah, in the
right?
Train, yeah.
Okay, I see. And then you come in and then get settled. You bring your stuff in. They probably have some refreshments, give you a little bit of time to chill.
Yeah.
And then on Monday, did you have just kind of like an initial group kind of orientation thing? Or what was the first thing that you did in the event?
We came in. We sat in the back in the yard, and we met everybody, all the attendees. We waited until 12, and that's when we went into the studio. And then Chris started speaking to us, told us what we were going to do throughout the week, and, you know, just welcomed us.
That's when you met Chris, was in the control room
yes.
where you were all ushered in. And then he gave you an overview, right?
Yeah.
Talked about it. And then what else happened that day?
And then after that, he went straight into mixing a song.
Just right into it. Boom, let's start mixing.
They finished it in 1 hour.
Wow. So here, I got a question for you. You played me the mix that CLA did for your song, and I didn't know that he actually did mixes for the attendees' projects. You came prepared. You came with a Pro Tool session, right?
Yes.
Ready to mix.
Yes.
Yeah. Did they tell you in advance, have something ready for Chris to mix?
Yes. The guy, Shane, he emailed everybody. And to let us know that he...
Shane!
Yeah.
I got an email from Shane today. First of all, helping me with my password with Mix with the Masters. And you know...
Oh, yeah, Shane.
I have the...
He's pretty cool.
I've been a member for 3 years. For me, that's like about $900, right? And it's like, $900? But for 3 years of Mix with the Masters stuff, it's still a good value, right? I mean, compared to actually flying there, right?
Yeah.
So Shane, I'm working to negotiate a special rate for Foothill College students so we can use this material like legit,
yes.
full-time, like a textbook. Like this is the required textbook. Instead of
yes.
buying this book from some dude for $100 or whatever, then you're going to just subscribe to Mix with the Masters for the duration of our quarter.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Wouldn't it be cool to get
that'd
into it?
That would be cool.
So then Shane told you, he gave you a heads up and he said, bring something for Chris to mix.
Yes.
That's amazing because
yeah.
I never heard of that before. I have heard that during these seminars that the presenter would review your mixes. I've heard about that. Like you work on a mix.
Yeah, I guess everybody's different. Like everybody does it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was really exciting for me to hear. But first of all, the mix that you played, it just sounds amazing. And then we also thought about it. Dave Gakely here, the owner of Suspect Studios, his question was that included in the price? Yeah. Because you know how much he charges to mix a song, and you're lucky if you can get one for, you know, $3,000-$5,000 for him to mix one song.
Yeah, I know. I mean, at first I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
That's
like,
pretty amazing, right? Okay, so you were ready. Yes. So let me ask you this. What was the process in getting the audio on your hard drive, which was, it was a Pro Tools session, right?
Yes.
Up to the point where he could start working on it. And I think you mentioned that his assistant came with him.
Yeah, well, we each had to speak to the assistant and show him a Pro Tools session to see if it was ready.
So when you met with the assistant, was that a private meeting or was that in the class so everybody could learn?
It was after the class around 10, 11 p.m.
Okay, it was like you met with the assistant to kind of prep the session, get it ready for Chris.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't like a part of the seminar kind of a thing.
No.
Was there anything that you remember that had to be done? What kind of changes did they need to make to your session before the assistant deemed it ready for Chris?
The only thing that I really had to change was just the coloring on the tracks. He likes it a certain way.
The color coding.
That's pretty much all I had to change.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know why? My theory is that part of that is because your education at Foothill College trained you very well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right on, man.
I had my session ready, and most of the other guys, it took them longer to prepare the session.
So what you're saying is that your training at Foothill College allowed you to prep your Pro Tools session so you could pass it off to Chris Lord-Alge, a world-class mixer.
It was pretty much ready, just besides the color coding.
Now you know something? Part of that is because of the classes and the training, but also it's because you put in the time.
Yeah.
You actually studied it, you did it, you worked on it. So hats off to you on that. And thank you for the feedback, because a lot of times, a lot of these tutorials and the information that I teach, I think sometimes it's like overboard and it's going over students' heads and they're not really into it. But once in a blue moon, a student like you comes along that is ready for it and can handle it and appreciates it.
And I remember right before I went, there was an assignment, right? There was one assignment where it says how to prepare a track for...
Yeah.
And I actually mentioned that to him. That was one of our assignments.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. And Ben, just out of curiosity, what are your personal track color preferences? How do you like to do it? I'm just curious.
Like for vocals, I used to use yellow. Mm-hmm. And he likes to use blue.
Okay.
For vocals.
Uh-huh. What did he use for drums? What color?
For drums, I wrote it down. Okay, so drums are red, guitars, green, purple for bass, and blue for the vocals.
G is for guitar, so G is green. I got that. What color is the drums again?
Red.
Okay, red. He likes drums. Drums are hot, so makes them red, you know. By the way, those are some very nice notes you got there. So it looks like you take good notes.
They gave us a notebook.
Oh, cool. And you wrote it down. Right on. Okay, cool. So then, did you mix it the next day?
Day after that.
Okay, so tell me, how did it work? Did Chris say, okay, now we're going to mix Jose's song? Something like that? Or did you know that you were going to be up to bat?
Pretty much he went like the order he chose by the people, the way he wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then when yours was up to bat, how did he start? Had he listened to it before? Did he check him out a little bit?
No.
Not too much?
He doesn't, he said that he doesn't like to listen to him.
Okay.
Before he just...
All right. Okay, so tell me what the process was.
Okay, so pretty much the assistant opened up the session.
Now, this is playing back in Pro Tools, but basically individual outputs bringing up the tracks into SSL channels of the mixing console, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He turns up all the tracks without listening to it. He adds a plugin without listening to it. First, he inserts all the plugins. He uses mainly the same plugins, the SSL EQ, the CLA-76. He doesn't really use the compression.
Did he personally insert the plugins, or did he ask the assistant to insert
the plugins? He asked the assistant to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he plays our rough mix, and then after that, he starts...
So you had a rough mix there?
Yeah.
So he was working together with the assistants.
Yes.
So the assistant was kind of like the Pro Tools operator?
Yeah, pretty much.
Kind of like off to the side a little bit?
Yeah, he was on the side.
And Chris CLA was in the center of the SSL mixing console doing his mix.
Yes.
So he didn't have to think about necessarily Pro Tools stuff. He would call out what he wanted, which is cool. It's kind of like a teamwork kind of a thing.
Yeah, pretty much. But sometimes the assistant, he didn't speak English too well. So he would, Chris would go onto the computer and do some of the stuff.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. And then tell me how he built the mix. What were the steps that he used to the best of your recollection? I heard the mix, it sounds amazing.
First he would work on the drums, just tweak the EQ a little bit.
So when he was working on the drums, was he playing the other musical parts too, like the bass and the vocals? Sometimes did he just solo the drums, but then did you hear him with the rest of the mix when he was working
on
the drums?
Yeah, sometimes he did solo, and on mine, on the snare, I think it was a snare, he put in a sample.
Okay, so how did he do that? Do you remember what he used? What kind of, did he use like Slate's trigger? Do you remember the software or the editing workflow that he used to trigger a sample?
I forgot which one
okay.
it was that he
fair
used.
Fair enough, yeah. You mentioned that he did a number of things to the arrangement. Please continue the story. Like, he started with the drums, and then he did a sample, and then how did it continue to evolve?
He listened to the vocals and then the whole arrangement, and he changed it because he was like, okay, the song was kind of too long. And he said it would be kind of too boring if it was that long. So he made it shorter. He changed the hook. One of the verses, he made his own hook, pretty much.
So this is editing in Pro Tools.
Yeah, in Pro Tools.
Because you're on the grid, you have a tempo.
Yeah.
So you can just go into grid editing and copy and paste and move things around pretty easily. So that's another good thing, that you had the session at that level of prep so that those type of edits could be made. Now, was this the assistant that did the edits?
At times, mostly it was assistant, but at times when the assistant didn't understand what he was trying to do, he did it himself.
Even for the editing, for like copy and paste and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so change the arrangement around. That's cool. And by the way, did you get a copy of that session?
No, not the session.
Did you ask for it?
Everybody asked for it.
They wouldn't let it go?
They said no.
Okay, so that's interesting, and I totally understand that. There's a trade-off between being generous and being a teacher and giving some back versus your intellectual property that's part of your, I won't say trade secrets, but it's part of who you are.
Yeah.
You know? And then it can maybe be a bit of a gray area. Should I let this one go? Let that one go? Not this, maybe that. And so I could see why they just adopted a blanket policy that you're not going to get a copy of that.
Yeah, you know? They just gave us the vocal by itself and the instrumental by itself.
Yeah,
both tracks.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
And even though it's done on an SSL mixing console and you can't really get a copy of that, I guess you could take, did they let you take photos of the console?
Yes.
So you could take, you know, to whatever those are.
They only let us have our phone inside there after the
okay, yeah,
the
fair enough. Yeah. Right, yeah. So, I mean, you could take shots of the SSL and you could, you know, get some stuff with that. But basically, you're not going to be able to recall the mix unless you have the full SSL.
Yeah, we had to leave our phone outside on the table.
And that's cool. And then I should do that in my classes. And then the Pro Tools session, it's not really that useful to you. He chopped it up and stuff like that, although now that I think about it, it probably would be really cool if he would have gave it to you, right?
It would.
I mean, it's particularly cool if the mix is done 100% in the box. Then you can check that out. Then what else did he do in addition to changing the arrangement a little bit and adding a snare sample? What else did he do as far as like adding stuff? Any other parts or loops?
For adding, that was pretty much it.
Okay.
He used the same plugins, he put the EQ plugin first, and then the CLA 76 also, and then a limiter.
Okay.
Those are the three only ones that he used.
He used those in Pro Tools.
In Pro Tools,
before it came up into the SSL.
Yes. And then after all that, he did the automation at the end, and, you know, he moved up the reverb.
He was using the SSL automation.
Yeah, SSL automation.
Playing it in there. He was performing the mix with faders.
Yes. Right?
How many total tracks was your session, your mix?
It was around 12 tracks, I believe.
Okay.
It was not too much.
So the music was not a lot of music tracks.
Not too many, though.
Okay, yeah. But you still had them isolated. You had the kick on a separate track.
Yeah, everything was separate.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, that's cool. How long did he spend on that mix?
It was around an hour and like 15, 20 minutes.
That's amazing. That fast.
Yeah.
He got it sounding that good that fast.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, he says he just goes by feeling.
Yeah,
he doesn't like to take too much time on a mix.
Because it's not uncommon to spend a day or two on one song. That's not uncommon. So somebody who can mix that fast is really amazing. And also, for him to have the confidence like, I can mix this. Like, he's on, his ass is on the line, right? He's like, people are there paying money, watching him. He has to deliver the goods.
Yeah, and like, another crazy thing is that all most of the songs were all different styles.
Uh-huh.
Like, mine was more like R&B type style. Okay. Some guys took rock, some German songs.
Yeah.
A guy was from China. He took a Chinese, like, pop type of style song. All the songs were different.
He mixed all of them. Yeah.
In, like, the same amount of time.
Wow. So that was, like, a big part of the seminar.
Yeah.
Him mixing stuff. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when they do seminars like this, they'll, like, just work on one song for the whole week, and the teacher will just demonstrate different techniques every day, different stuff, and kind of layer it, which is cool. But this is, like, never a dull moment, mixing different songs. So you're trying to say he mixed everybody, brought a song?
Except one person. So it was 14 songs that he mixed.
Wow, that's amazing. That's pretty much, that's the week right there, right?
Yeah.
And then you talked about it.
And then he also mixed some of his, I know he mixed one of Green Day's.
Wow.
He tried to get the same sound as he did on the album.
Wow. While he's working, what was it like for you in the audience? How close were you able to sit? Okay. How close could you see on the console?
So the way it was set up, there was a couch in the front. It was like four people could fit in the front. And then behind the couch, it was a table with chairs around it lined up. We rotated. The first day, I sat on the couch. And then, you know, afterwards, I sat in one of the chairs. And then at the end, I sat on the couch again. So it was pretty close, like right in front. And if we wanted to, we could stand up and watch what he's doing.
You were welcome to stand up and walk around and get different views and stuff. You ate breakfast on site, right?
Yeah.
The kitchen, you all sit. They have a big enough place where you can all sit down at a table.
Yeah, they have a kitchen inside, or because I know some days it rain, so we ate inside. But most of the time, they set the table outside.
Okay.
On the yard.
Okay.
And it's a pretty big table.
It's kind of like they have a whole staff with chefs and people helping and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing, right?
Yeah.
They kind of cater to, it's like a 5-star hotel kind of a vibe, right?
Yeah. So
very high-end, right?
Yeah, very high-end.
Okay.
The food was really good.
I think you mentioned that at least one time you went out to eat at a restaurant?
We went to a bar, actually.
Oh, went to a bar, okay.
Yeah, after, I think it was Friday.
Okay.
We went to a bar.
Kind of a celebration, kind of group party out at a bar kind of a thing.
Yeah, we're playing pool.
Oh, okay.
You know, some guys were drinking beer.
And CLA just hanging was out there?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's hanging out with you.
Yeah.
You're in a bar drinking beer and playing pool with Chris Lord Alge, and he's talking?
Yeah, joking.
Okay, so tell us, my impression of Chris Lord Alge is, number one, he's really, really smart. Number two, he's very charismatic. Like, I just imagine that when he walks into the room, you would just go, whoa. You know, like, he's very, very high energy, right?
Yeah, he is.
And also, he seems like a really, really genuinely nice person who really cares. So that's my impression. I've never met him face to face. So what was it like? What can you tell us about CLA being in his presence?
He's pretty cool. I mean, he's funny. He says a lot of jokes. Oh. You know, like, jokes around a lot with everybody.
Uh-huh.
You know, he is friendly, very friendly, super smart. He's pretty cool. I mean, he's like a regular, pretty cool guy, man.
And he has to be on it. Like, when I see him, he's on video, so he has to be kind of, he's performing, he has to be ultra hyped. So when you're with him for a whole week, as he's talking, as he's demonstrating, does he have the same level of kind of, like, I want to say high energy, charismatic intensity? Or does he knock it down a little bit? And does he ever get chill?
To me, it seemed like he has too much energy.
Yeah, okay.
He's always the same.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah. Because in that situation, he's, in essence, performing in front of 14 or 15 people, paid a lot of money, obviously. Also, it's not just like a one-hour thing at a trade show. Like, he's going all day long for a whole week. That takes a lot to do that.
And then we also got, like, a one-on-one. Everybody got a one-on-one with him.
Oh, tell me about that. How did that work?
So, during the week, everybody got a one-on-one, and then we, you know...
Manage the schedule for that? How did you sign up? Or
it was after your mix, whoever song was mixed that day, he would meet with you after that.
Okay, so every day you'd have to do at least 3 songs per day.
Yeah, 3. So during he makes some in the morning, so whoever he makes in the morning, he would meet with them, say during a break time or lunch time.
What was that like? You had a one-on-one consultation with Chris Lord Alge. Right?
That was pretty cool.
Now, when you say one-on-one, that means he's talking to you, he's directing his attention to you, But were the other students allowed to observe?
No. The students were mainly either inside or around the yard. And we walked to the very back of the yard. It had a table set up, and that's where we talked.
Oh, okay. So the talk, the one-on-one consultation, it wasn't in front of the mixing console.
No, it was outside. Outside. Okay. Yeah, outside.
It was more like, kind of like, what's up? You know, how can I help you? You could ask questions. So then,
yeah.
What kind of questions did you ask, and what kind of things did he have to say to you?
Well, I asked him for advice on, you know, certain things that I should, what should I do?
For example?
I'm just starting out, mm-hmm. and what do you suggest I should work on more to better my mixing or to get more, like to get clients, to get, you know, so I mix their songs and make money out of it also. And he pretty much told me, since I'm just starting out, he said, just get as much experience as you can, record as, you know, record anything you can, everybody you can, reach out to them. And he was like, wear all black, you know, it seemed like you're actually already doing it. Don't look like a student. What else did he say? He said, oh, and one thing he said also is never talk money with the client. He said, say, oh, I have a manager. Even if you don't have a manager, just tell them that you have a manager and that you're going to give him his number or email, pretty much email. Mm. And, you know, even if it's you email them later, you tell them, oh, this is a price that we do. You know, my Jose is pretty busy, but I could see if I could book you some time with him to mix your song. Yeah, he's just some of the things they told me.
Did he give similar advice to the whole group?
No.
The whole idea about using a manager as an intermediary communication mechanism, to use a manager to talk to your, quote, client, that's a pretty high-end thing.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you that I forgot to ask, Jose. What are your goals professionally and career-wise?
My goals are, I want to own a studio, recording studio, and be able for me, you know, to do the mixing. I know a lot of people that want to record, but, you know, right now I'm not unable to do that in my house.
So I think also you mentioned that one of your jobs is you're a machinist.
I'm a mechanic.
And then what kind of mechanic?
Cars, diesel, trucks, equipment.
Oh, and where do you work?
I work here in Mountain View. The company is a waterproofing company.
Oh, waterproofing?
Yeah.
Waterproofing buildings or?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, waterproofing buildings, pretty much everything.
Now, tell me about your interaction with the other students there, okay?
They were all very cool. I mean, everybody's from different parts of the world. Some guys from Germany, France, Israel, Bahrain is a country next to Israel. Saudi Arabia, China, and Switzerland.
Wow. How was the quality of their work that they wanted to have mixed? Was it?
Some of the guys, pretty good. Like the guy from Bahrain, I guess he's pretty big over there in this country.
So the tracks sounded good.
They sounded already pretty good.
Yeah. Did everybody speak enough English so you could communicate with them?
Pretty much, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you make any connections with some of those students that you think you'll continue communicating with over?
Yeah, I still talk to all of them.
Oh, pretty all of them.
Yeah, we all got a Facebook group.
Oh,
I got their phone numbers and emails.
Okay.
So
right on.
I got everybody's contact.
They made a Facebook group just for that.
Yeah, event. Just for us. Yeah.
Right. So you got a closed Facebook group, and you guys talk to each other like that. That's cool.
Yeah. We pretty much talk to each other like every day.
Wow, that's cool. What format did Chris print your mix? Did he put it back into a couple tracks in Pro Tools? He recorded it as a WAV file, right?
Yes.
So he recorded it back into the Pro Tools system, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, just a couple tracks.
Yeah.
Since it's going through the SSL, you can't bounce to disk. It's a real-time thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember if he was using any specific hardware on the master bus?
On the master bus?
Probably he was using the SSL compressor on the console.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that either that was the first time you'd seen an SSL face-to-face. You haven't done a lot of work on an SSL console, right?
This is the first time seeing
First time
it.
Ever seen yeah, one, right? It's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, when I first sat down, like, oh, like, whoa.
Yeah. I've never owned an SSL console myself either, but I have owned little modules. Like, I know the stereo compressor. I know that really well because I used to rent one, and then I finally bought one, and then I bought a second one. So I used to put everything through those, and I was making the migration from analog mixing to hybrid mixing to 100% in the box. The SSL compressor was the last thing that I removed from the signal path because I couldn't really imagine, like, how could I mix without an SSL compressor? So I used to put everything through that. And I know that really well. But I've never owned a real SSL board. I've seen some of my friends buy them and just like installing them. You know, it takes like 3 weeks just to wire it up, right? You bring it in on cranes, you got to chop it up. It takes like, you know, five people just to move.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And it used to be like, I don't know, you get a used one for like $300,000. You get a starter package for $300,000.
I think they said that one was close to $1 million.
About $1 million, right? Back in the day, $1 million for that board, right?
Yeah.
So you do the math.
You know? Yeah.
So
crazy.
I got to hand it to you for having the initiative to go there and do it. And also, you know, I think the advice that CLA gave you to just get the experience, like whenever you have the chance, go just record some stuff, some mix some stuff to log it in.
Yeah, he said make mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes, you know, but sometimes you probably don't know what you're doing or what, you know, he said just act like you know, but learn from that. He's like, just learn.
And just doing it, I mean, just logging in the time. So I got to hand it to you for taking the time to schedule, like at Foothill College, like you'll actually book the time and you'll actually do it. So what do you have to say to other Foothill College music tech students to encourage them to actually book time, to actually use the studio and do it?
I think that's one of the main ways you're actually going to learn, like, the real life, how, you know, to record, make mistakes, and, you know, you record one day and then next time you know what you did wrong. I think that's the best way, you know, to do it, because there's so much you can learn only online. You can learn everything online.
Yeah. You know the studio calendar at Foothill, right? The
Google
calendar. You see it, right?
Yeah, I see it.
And then you notice, like, you know how many students we actually have in our classes, right? We might have like 50 students in a class, right?
Yeah.
And then you see how little the studio is used, right?
Yeah, I saw that, and sometimes I feel like just booking all of it, but I got to give people a chance to.
Yeah, and I see your name. You can see Jose. And also, we notice there's a few other students that are logging in some time, right? You might see another student's name, like Wayne, or whatever. What do you have to say to the students that never book studio time?
You have to book. I mean, that's a way of learning, you know? You have to book.
Why do you think some students don't book studio time? What do you think, if you had to guess?
I'm not sure. The only reason why I wouldn't book is because of my schedule. That's the only reason why I don't book. Yeah. I wouldn't book.
Yeah. I think some students are initially a little bit apprehensive, or they're a little bit kind of intimidated or overwhelmed. Like, they feel like they're not ready, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so one thing that I've been doing in my classes is to have like a 15-minute orientation session where I actually enforce... If I require students to book time, if it's a required assignment, then they'll book time.
Yeah.
But if I don't require students to book time, a lot of them are not going to book time. I think maybe part of it is that realistically, the students that really want to be audio engineers is like, I don't know, maybe 10% or something. It's a small number, perhaps.
Yeah.
Also, some of them are kind of like intimidated, so we get them acclimated and give them a little tour and stuff like that. But the other thing is, it's true that there's limited availability. So has that been one of your observations? Like, let me ask you this. If the Foothill Studio was available on Saturdays,
I would book all day. Every Saturday.
Yeah, you know what? It was a little bit before your time, but back in the golden ages of Foothill College, we had that studio going 7 days a week from 10 a.m. until 10 p.m.
Oh.
And even would go a little after 10 p.m., which is kind of like against the rules, but they would kind of like jack the alarm system, and the police department would go home, and kids would be in there until like 2 a.m, right? And then they kind of changed the rules where the whole key is, there was like a whole policy thing. We're looking to try to open it back up. And wouldn't it be great if you had Saturday and Sunday?
Man, that would be perfect.
And by the way, we can do classes. We can do projects there on the weekends. It might not necessarily be overtly open in the calendar.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me ask you this. What kind of projects do you want to work on? What's like kind of like on your wish list or your to-do list or your plans for upcoming projects?
I want to record drums, guitars, pretty much all the instruments, because mainly I have only been recording just vocals, and then, you know, just bring in a beat that a friend made or that the artist brought. So that's my goal, to learn how to record vocals, drums and different instruments correctly.
Did you play sports?
Not really.
Not as much. Yeah, I didn't do the whole sports thing. And you did not like take piano lessons or guitar lessons when you were a little kid.
I took one piano class at Foothill.
Oh, okay, good.
It was on Saturdays.
You drove down from Oakland?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. That's good that you have that.
Yeah.
Because it'd be hard to do that 100% online. The rest has been working in the studio.
Yeah.
And I'm a musician. My background is a player. And I did play sports back in the day. And I kind of have approached the recording studio like an instrument, where I consider it an instrument, working on things on a technical level, like just playing around and stuff, like just practicing patching stuff or experimenting with a plugin or doing different things.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost like as a musician learning scales and arpeggios, or as a drummer learning drum rudiments. So we work on technical exercises to get that together. And so some students have not really wanted to do that. Like, I just want to like work on music, and they don't want to take the time to practice stuff. But I think from what you were saying is, when you said you want to learn how to record drums,
yes,
like part of it would be just practicing, right? Like bring in some drums,
yeah,
set up some microphones,
yeah,
hit some drums, run them through some preamps and stuff like that. And just that alone is very valuable, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It would be.
And as a matter of fact, you kind of have to do that, because you're not going to do that at the time when you bring in, like, if you're not going to bring in a band and have them be like the guinea pig where you have zero experience, right?
That's true.
That's a recipe for disaster. So we need to log in time to practice stuff. And it's like the more time we log in, the better.
Yeah, the better.
And certainly if we were to ask Chris Lord-Alge, like, what his background is, I'm sure he's done all kinds of stuff for free. Or like, you know, the story with Derek Ali, mixed by Ali. Actually, any engineer has just logged in so much time, and they weren't getting paid at the beginning.
Yeah, Chris mentioned that he started when he was 13. His mom took him to the studio.
Wow.
And he used to help out.
Yeah.
That's how he started. And he said, when he was older, some guy left, and then he got to engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how he started.
Let's talk about, maybe for lack of a better term, let's talk about unpaid internships, the concepts, right?
Okay.
So an unpaid internship, the idea is that basically you're working for free in exchange for being trained and gathering experience.
Yes.
I'm curious, how do you feel about that concept?
That's the best thing to do. I think. I wish I could do that. In a studio.
Some people, some students, and even administrative powers that be are negative about internship type things because they feel it's taking advantage of the students or exploiting them or something like that. You know.
I don't think so. I think that's the best way for them to learn.
I don't think so either. Also, I think that it's a hospitality industry. So a recording studio is very much like a 5-star hotel, or at least we strive for it to be a 5-star hotel, so that our clients are like, you know, like rock star customers, and we treat them like royalty. And
I actually did a short internship when I used to live in Florida at a studio over there. I did it for like 4 months. I wasn't getting paid, but I was helping out with the social media, making flyers and stuff like that.
Right.
And some at times booking, like answering phone calls.
Right. And so what were some of your benefits? What did you learn? What did you get out of it?
Well, I wanted to learn more of the engineering, but they only had that position open. But I learned how to set up, everything about setting up the studio time, getting clients and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's what I learned.
Yeah, I think that the internship model is valuable for the right person, for the right student who is really interested in pursuing it. And also, it has to be, the studio and the internship program has to give something back. You have to be learning stuff. You have to be gathering stuff. So it's not just a total waste. But, really, We're here at Suspect Studios with Dave Gakely, and Dave Gakely is by far the number one janitor. Dave Gakely is like Mr. Clean, and so he's vacuuming. And Dave cleans the bathrooms every day.
You know?
Like, and it's not above him. And I used to say that the amount of trash generated by a recording facility is directly proportionate to how much money it's making.
And I remember in the studio in Florida, we used to take turns cleaning the bathroom.
Yeah, I never ask interns to do hardcore janitorial. Okay, so what was the final? How did you wrap it up? What was kind of like the grand finale, or was there any kind of like? I guess he mixed Green Day. Can't get much better than that. But
the last day, the last night, we went to a different room, like a big hall room, and he had the big bare speakers connected, and he played everybody's mix.
Wow!
And we ate dinner, had wine.
Awesome!
And we just hung out. Yeah, like everybody hung out.
Got to play all the stuff.
Yeah.
And then, during the mix or after the mix, did many students have much to say as far as comments or opinions or suggestions? Was there much of a discussion about the mix between the students?
Yeah, I mean, after everybody's mix, you know, they asked questions. Why he did a certain thing on, say, the vocals or...
Coincidentally, it's kind of funny. Today, Mix with the Masters just posted a new video tutorial with CLA mixing vocals.
Yeah.
Right? And the first thing I did is open it up. It's great. And I saw how he did it. Basically, he uses mostly his plugins that he invented for Waves, but I thought that was cool.
One thing that he did mention when we were having lunch, he said he's coming out with his own speakers.
Oh,
the CLA 10s.
Oh, like NS10s.
Like NS10s. He said they're going to make them the same way, everything the same, but just his name.
Okay. But would they be Yamaha?
No.
Oh, CLA10s.
CLA10s.
Right? Now, I got some NS10s for sale. They're up in the attic, and I know NS10s. I've owned a lot of them. And I've thought about putting them in here, but I don't have them in here right now. And I'm not really sure how I'd fit them, but that's a trip. You got to hand it to him for kind of diversifying. You know, he has different business ventures going on, you know.
Yeah.
I think the industry has changed a lot since the golden ages. Like once upon a time, you had to go, as you know, once upon a time, home studios did not exist on the level that they do. And now you literally can do a record on a laptop and some headphones, really.
Yep.
And so back in the day, you did not have a choice but to hire CLA to mix your record, and that the money that was charged for those records back in those days,
it was higher.
Like when Tony Maserati was in his peak and stuff like that, not only do they get paid a lot of money, did they talk about residual income royalties? Did he talk about that? What I'm talking about?
Yeah. Not really, but he did mention, I forgot the name of the band, but they paid him $40,000 per song, and it was around 12 songs in the album.
$40,000 per song to do a mix?
Yes. That's crazy.
Wait a second. That's $500,000.
Yeah.
Did he say he shared that to everybody in class or just to you?
Everybody.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was back in the day.
Yeah, he was saying that, oh, that's back in the days. No, not anymore.
Yeah.
He was saying like...
That was back in the day. Yeah. So if you're smart, you took that money and you bought some cheap real estate in California or whatever, you know. Now things have really changed a lot. But also, so he's not making as much money per song these days, but he's also doing other stuff. He has like the Waves plugins and speakers and teaching at CLA and stuff like that. Now that you've gone to Mix with the Masters, you actually attended. Now when you go to the website, the Mix with the Masters website, do you view it differently now? Has anything changed? Do you feel more connected with it? Do you value the content more?
Yes, I value it more.
Why is that?
I guess because I was there and I was with Chris, and you know, he was mixing live. Just the whole experience, you know, just being there.
So you have more of a connection with Mix with the Masters, and when you see the content, you're able to kind of connect with it more. And so you actually, since you paid that much money to go to France, now the annual for students,
they actually gave me a discount.
Oh, they did. Yes, that's cool.
Because I told Shane it was my birthday. It was my birthday on Monday.
So just off the record, is it $199 a year?
for the... No, I'm talking about the set. The
oh, they gave you a discount for the week.
For the seminar,
oh, okay,
yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. But still, it was a lot more than $200, right?
Yeah.
So do you currently have a subscription to Mix with the Masters?
Yes.
What would you say to Foothill students that are considering subscribing to Mix with the Masters?
I think they should. You know, I think that's one thing they have to do. You learn a lot, and if you're able to ever attend a seminar, you know, go for it, man. You meet a lot of people, the other attendees, you know, you network with them, and it's a great experience.
Do you think you might go back again sometime?
I'm going back.
I'm going back. You are?
Yeah. Once I'm better, I want to go back.
You answered that question before.
Me and the other guys were talking about that. When are we going back?
Uh-huh.
And everybody wants to go back.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Cool, man. So thank you. This is, it's great. You know, we all learn together, right? You never stop learning. So I get to learn from this too. Oh, tell me about how you've been using social media to connect with local artists here in the Bay Area to collaborate.
I use my Instagram mainly. And then I just direct message the artist and, you know, I tell them I'm a student at Foothill College.
How do you find the artist?
I just look on you know, different pages. On the tags, I type in Bay Area artist or Oakland artist or, you know.
So the Instagram tags, a lot of times people are putting in some metadata tags to get a geographic location.
Yeah.
They'll put Bay Area or Oakland, San Jose.
That's what I use.
So you kind of filter that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might look for R&B or hip-hop or vocalist or beatmaker, producer, Bay Area. Or you might even just put like Bay Area or Oakland to see what's up there.
Yeah.
And so then you see them on Instagram, you check them out, and then you'll message them and say, what's up?
Yeah, I tell them, I'm a student at Foothill College. I'm learning, you know, how to record, mix and master and all that. And then, you know, I could book you some time if, you know, I just want to for practice.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's what I pretty much tell them.
Yeah, hustle.
It's, a lot know, of them, some people say no or they're busy or whatever, but a lot of people say yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I found when we say Foothill College, it's like a wild card where we get the red carpet treatment. Foothill has such a great reputation. You know, when you say Foothill College, like Foothill College, oh, why don't you say so? And that's even before they learn how cool it is, right? Because they really don't have. Until you actually show up. Right now, the online photos or any
type of marketing. Not too many photos online.
We don't have the social media that conveys how cool it is, right?
Yeah.
So when you finally show up, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, this studio is worth $100 an hour. I can't believe it, right?
Yeah.
And same thing goes when you're reaching out to Instagram artists. For all they know, you're just some kind of kid at a community college messing around, right?
Yeah.
They don't really know that you're going to set them up with a Telefunken 251 on a Avid S6.
Yeah.
And if you were to help expand the success of the Foothill College Music Technology Program, what kind of suggestions would you offer? What kind of tangible actions might we take to increase the enrollments and general awareness of our program?
I think the online, like Facebook, on Instagram, more pictures, videos of everything, you know.
Content.
Maybe show a session of a student, you know, practicing or stuff like that.
On an Instagram channel.
On an Instagram
everything.
Channel.
Everything. So
website, Instagram. Maybe you can have an Instagram channel and then the website at the top. That,
uh-huh.
The link to the website. It goes to the website.
Do you have a website?
I made a website and I made it because I took a music, one of the classes at Foothill.
Uh-huh.
About making websites.
Okay, good, good. Yeah,
That's why I made my website.
And do you use Twitter much?
I don't really use Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I just Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, so you don't follow Twitter.
I have one, but I don't use it.
What is Twitter for? More older people, would you say?
Or
Twitter seems to be really popular for like a huge demographic.
I don't know. I guess it's just I don't really like it. I don't know why.
Fair enough.
Instagram.
Yeah, just personal preference.
Because Instagram, you can see.
Yeah.
Videos and...
Yeah. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, maybe yes, maybe no.
One good thing about Facebook and Instagram, you could do the promotion.
Yeah.
You pay
like
$5 a day.
Right,
and,
right.
And I do that because I make flyers.
Okay.
So I made a flyer saying, oh, I could do your cover for album, whatever.
Okay.
And then I got customers like that also.
Okay. We should talk about that. We should talk about hiring you to help us with our program or maybe doing a trade or something like that.
No, love to.
Okay, yeah, man.